This is June 11th, 1979, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We would like to ask you to speak at greater length on the topic of rules, the spiritual rules that one carries around with oneself pertaining to one's path to enlightenment. And perhaps we should start with my giving you one of my rules. I've written down several here that I realize I carry around with me. I'm under the impression at some level that you don't get something for nothing.
The sacrifice.
Right. It's going to be a sacrifice and very painful.
Yes. Well, sacrifice is one of the main obstacles to clarity that most humans carry around. Somehow, I suppose, through the organized religions of the world, one has always thought in terms of having to give up something in order to get the spiritual awareness. And of course, the fact is that as you sit here right now, you are all totally spiritually aware. The self, and in this case, the vast, large self, is ever manifesting, is ever present, is ever ready for its movement into new and vaster things. But you sit quietly in your own isolation of ego understandings. But rules, if those of you who did as I suggested, and I suspect there are a few of you who did it, who really did make a list of rules that you know you carry around that are limiting you from spiritual understanding, then if you have done this job well, you will have noted one thing, which is that they are contradictory. You can, for example, say that one of your rules is to serve your family, your wife, your husband, your children, whatever, and that you be selfless in your service toward them. Now, on the other hand, you might have a rule down there that you have to be very rigorous in your meditation times, or that you sexual relationships are a negative experience when you're seeking the highest, or that participating in such things as television and reading and so on, all of these things would detract you. Now, how then can you achieve understanding and freedom if on the one hand you want to be selfless in serving your family, which means doing whatever they want, not what you want, on the one hand, but on the other hand you also hold this firm belief that you are not able to reach the highest realm of understanding unless you live a reclusive life? This puts it in a paradox, does it not? And what you will find if you are looking carefully is that all of you have these contradictory ideas. Now, there are various ways that we can talk about this, and I'm going to start at the top, and then we will go down to the various other levels of understanding that one can deal with when it comes to rules. If you start at the top, the advice is, now that you have learned of your rules, and I assure you that if you have not done your homework in this regard, you will be sorry, because you are not able to understand something that you have not brought to your level of awareness. So those of you who have not done it, I would suggest that you now take the time to do it. After hearing this tape, I would stress that it is important that you, because it's only through understanding that you can clarify. You are operating on rules that are below the level of consciousness for the most part. And the more time you take getting into that area and observing yourself and your own belief structure, you will become more and more at ease with who you are and what your limitations are, and therefore you will be easier, it will be easier for you to release yourself from them. So those of you who have not done it, I would ask that you do it now, that this is the time to release yourself. So once you have seen that there are limitations, if you want to speak from the highest, then you must somehow come upon something that is going to allow you to be totally released from your belief structure. Now, when I say this to you, some of you are going to be afraid. And the reason you're going to be afraid is that you have in your mind the firm belief that somehow God has written these rules and that you must follow them. This is the primary obstacle. Human beings think that God writes the laws and that you somehow have to muddle through your life finding out what those laws are, number one, which in itself is a very difficult observation. How are you to do that? Well, I'll tell you how most of you do it. You don't go on your own feelings, you go on the feelings of others. Those who have come before you, those who you might call your teachers at this time, whatever, you go on somebody else's observation of God's law. You do not think that you have a father figure who is fair. You have the ultimate of the father figure who has his laws and his rules of regulating your life, but then he says, but the trick is, I'm not going to reveal them to you. You must go through your life stumbling around and somehow come upon, out of the vast world, my laws. And when you come upon them, then it is your obligation to follow them to the very end. And may I assure you, my child, that as you are stumbling around looking for my laws, I am going to continue to punish you according to those laws, even though you don't know what they are. Now this, if you look carefully, is exactly what many of the minds listening to this tape are thinking. This is the kind of God that they have brought into their mind and are following with all their heart. And I say to you, what nonsense. What kind of a father is it that says to all of his children in his household, I have my rules, they're hidden, you go and find them, but you will continually be punished in many terrifying ways because you do not know my rules and therefore cannot follow them. Nonsense. What other nonsense? So what do? Well, you go to the religions of the world. You take whichever religion appeals to you and you take their rules and you begin to follow them and you have some kind of hope that in following those religion rules you will come to fruition, you will come to peace, and at least God will leave you alone. At least he will stop punishing you for something. So that is one approach, and there's no question about it, you can do it. But what is very interesting about this is that the more you go deeply into a religion, you come across within the human being this obstinacy that arises in one that says, I don't believe this. And then you are in a very difficult paradox, because on the one hand, that which you have sought to save you now comes into question itself, and you say, I don't believe that this is important. I don't believe that God really cares about this particular thing. I don't think this is a real God law. Why not? Well, because it conflicts with other religions who have God laws, and they do not coincide. This law is not their law. Then how can it be God's law? Then you are thrown into a question. Then are there two gods? Is there a God of the East and a God of the West? Is there a God of the North and a God of the South? And do their wills conflict? And if so, does not this say that it's very difficult for a poor human being to come into harmony with God's law if there are four and they're all capricious? So as you begin to move in deeply into a religious structure, those who deeply go into them find these areas. Now what one usually does is suppress them, swallows them, refuses to think about it. This is one reason why religions do not get excited about their followers reading other religions. Because there will be conflicts, there will be differences of opinion, there will be different views of things, there will be different things. People say, but down at the essence of it, it's all the same. Well, the only time I would agree with that is if you go all the way to the very base of their religion, and yes, I would say yes, that is true. But we're not talking about that source, because that's not where people are going. People are coming in at different levels, and the level that they mostly come in on is God's law. This great desire to follow God's will and thereby be left alone and have no God punishing them. This is really what they seek, is how to not be punished, how to avoid the wrath of God, which is a terrifying word, and I really do not approve of it. But nevertheless, that's my problem, not yours. All right, so if you come into this conflict with your religion and you decide not to swallow it, not to pass it by and just use it as your own human weakness, but you really challenge that whole faith, that whole religion, then what happens is that all of those who belong in that religion rise up against you. Because after all, you're threatening them, and if you point out flaws in the situation, they are going to be also found in jeopardy if they believe you. So you have gotten into a mare's nest. I mean, there are hornets all about your head and feet, and everyone is yelling and screaming and very unhappy, and you will find yourself thrown out of the faith, either on your own volition or by someone else's pushing you out. And I'm sure many of you listening to this tape are exactly aware of what I'm speaking of. So now you have placed yourself outside of the great bands of religion. Now, what most people do at this point is, let us say, they have been brought up as a Christian with all of its vast possibilities. Now, Christianity has failed them, but there's always Buddhism, or there's always Hinduism, or there's always Zenism. There's always something else. So many earthlings then go to the next stage, which is they try another religion, just one, let's say. And they go deeply into that one, and they at first are greatly excited by it because it has different characteristics. It perhaps is a little more liberating. It's new, it's charming, it's exciting. It's a whole new world. If in the past you have had an incarnation with that as its basis, well, then it is exciting. You move into it and get very excited. But the same eventually down the road applies. With the new ism as did with the old ism, you find yourself confronted again by all of the differences, the things that do not resound with truth within you, the things that you really see as limiting and not as expanding. And when you get into that realm again, now you really are lost, because you have tried your own faith, that did not work out. Now you have tried another great faith, and that did not work out, and where do you go? Now, the very careful person, if they're watching all of this drama, the careful person will at this stage really begin to move into deep understanding, because they will confront their belief structure, and their belief structure usually has something as a base to it that says something like this: you as a puny human being have no way of knowing God's law or God's will for you. You have no way of knowing that. And therefore, you are lost. You are destined to a life of suffering, of difficulty, of altercation, and of confusion, and no peace is possible under these circumstances. Now, if you are paying careful attention and you come across that in your mind, the next step should be easy, which is, I do not want anything to do with such a creator. I do not want anything to do with such a creator. I, as a puny human being, would not treat my offspring in this manner. Now, why do I then suppose that I should believe that the great creative principle of the universe is going to have this as its principle? Do you understand?
Yes.
It is simply absurd. It is absurd. And it is here that logic and reason must come to your aid. You know, you don't have any strong data to go on yet, because you are relatively, you know, new in this. So really, what happens at this stage, if you're doing it correctly, is you will perhaps run into one of those great satgurus in the world, who is probably no longer on the earth plane, but who would tell you clearly and definitely that you have within you all the necessary equipment in order to find out what this divine principle is and what its will is. If you have a true teacher, this is the place that the true teacher shows its color, because it will say, you have it all, it is available to you. You do not have to go through any magic, any mysteries, any initiations. You simply have to sit down and take your own inner world seriously. And in taking your own inner world seriously, you keep calling on the divine principle to show you its clarity that is needful for you. And then you wait and see. And you simply wait. You use yourself as the textbook of release. All right. Now let us follow up with this, to tie this in with the belief structure that we have spoken of. Those of you who find that you have any kind of a belief structure that is contradictory on one hand and on the other, or even if you have one belief structure that you think is limiting and therefore has come not from your inner being, but from data that you have learned from others, books that you have read, cultural differences, cultural ideas, cultural things that have encrusted upon your freedom. You know, that is all very much a part of it. It's the cultural bias that you grew up with. It's what your parents thought. It's what your friends think. It's what your wife or husband or friends are all involved in now. All of these things impinge. Every book you pick up to read influences you in some way or another. You know, it's so funny. People are all down on the television screen because they say that it influences. And it's interesting because books influence much more. You know, deeply. If you spend 4 and 5 and 6 days immersed in a book, it's going to have a much greater impact on you than a 2-hour viewing of the screen. And yet people pick up books and read them all the way through without any questioning of what is going on in their mind. I find this very strange. You know, the earth plane says, oh, reading is much more important and much more beneficial. And that, of course, goes the opposite. It is also much more diabolical and difficult. So these should be looked at, you know. It is very fancy these days to be down on the television and up on reading. But I think that the same rules should be applied. Just because a child is reading isn't terribly important. What are they reading? This is equally important. Anyway, that's a little aside that I have found most interesting on the earth plane. But in any case, back to the subject. When you face your own beliefs and you say, I want out, I don't want any of these encumbrances that are not really out of the fresh fountain of my own awareness, but are out of the stagnant pools of data that I've accumulated, not only in this lifetime, but over the centuries, and that the world has spent its whole time accumulating. When you say that, then you are really ready to get new life. And how do you do that? How do you break down a belief structure? Well, number one, you have to be aware of it. It has to be specific and not vague. The one main problem with most of you people listening to these tapes who are making very little so-called progress is that you are not detailed enough. You are vague. You are not being single-pointed. When I make a point to you, you just assume that you know the answer. You assume that, well, many of you assume that you are free from this encumbrance. For example, when I said that all of you have difficulties with people, with one person's exception, most of you didn't believe that. You thought yourself to also be the exception, and you would scan your mind quickly, and then someone would come to mind, but you would say, oh, yes, but that's only a minor difficulty. But you see, a minor difficulty is not a minor difficulty. A minor difficulty is a difficulty and must not be just cast off. But such is the ego that it just seeks to always see itself as some kind of a perfected sense. So, number one, be specific. Take it seriously. Be very specific. Get it down on a list. What is your belief? Now, as you sit in meditation with this, meditation then is a time of being serious about things. I don't mean dour. I mean serious. That means single-pointed, bringing your awareness to a point of power so that you can deal with things rather than having your energy floating all over in some kind of scattered pattern. And as you sit there, so intensely aware of your belief structure, then what you must do is be, as you would anything else, be aware that it exists. State within your mind, this need not be. And then proceed to go within yourself and listen and keep attuned to the new. You see, you cannot throw out the old by keeping the old in your mind. You have now gone through a process, if you've done this correctly. You have gone into what you call the unconscious, what I would call that which is not at the moment conscious. And you bring it to that level of consciousness, which simply means the now. You are taking the vast consciousness. This is with a small c, my friends, not with a large c. I'm speaking now of small consciousness. Mm-hmm. And you're going into the small awareness, the small consciousness part of your being, bringing these to the mind, to the now, so that they can be dealt with directly, not obscurely. And you are saying, this is what is there, and it need not be. And you simply turn from it. You know, it isn't difficult. But the process must be gone through. You must bring it up. You must see it. And then you must make a decision. just as those of you who are trapped in some kind of habit patterns that are not harmonious with what you really now wish to do, you can drop any habit pattern. There is no habit pattern that cannot be broken. There isn't some kind of power in the habit. The power is in your mind, and the mind goes over it and over it, reinforces it, thinks about it. Even if you're thinking negatively about it, you are still giving it power. Power is. It is not positive or negative. It simply is, and it follows. You know, power follows thought. So all you need to do is to now place as a new thrust your freedom. Freedom from your limitations. Freedom from all those kinds of limitations. And this is where I give the advice to those of you who do it, to see yourself as vast, vast, vast. See everything moving into the vastness. And in that kind of a vastness, there are no limitations. There are none. And so when you sit in your meditation in your vastness, you don't put any rules on how you're going to experience the divine principle. You simply sit there and allow the principle to become its own within you. No decisions in your mind, no limitations, just openness, freedom, the clear breath of the divine moving across the plains, across the mountains, across the earth's surface. That is what you keep in your mind. And if you are a hawk with your thoughts, as I've asked all of you to be, then when these thoughts of limitation come up, it's simply a matter of smiling within and putting in the vastness, the openness, the breezes that fly, that carry you to the uttermost reaches of the universe. This is all that's necessary. It isn't a magical thing. And then sitting quietly and allowing the vastness to show itself to you, to show itself, you know, to God's will, if you wish to put it that way, is absolutely available at every moment. The problem is, of course, that you cannot write God's will in great tomes, because God's will acts in the moment. And you have no way of knowing what God's will is unless you're in the moment and attuned to that power. And then it will show you. It is not something that you can state and then follow from here to the end of the earth. That kind of a law is a human law. It is a constricting law. God's laws, if you wish to use that term, are ever, ever vast, ever new, ever revealing, ever creative. There is only one thing that I would tell you is an absolute, and that is love. That is love. But when I say that to all of you, you don't even know what I'm talking about, because most of you have the most limiting, the most constricting, the most diabolical ideas of what love is, that you don't even know what I mean when I say that. So if you could just keep it all open at this stage, I think you will find interesting results. All right, now let us go down a step. All right. Certainly, certainly.
Which is, as you've indicated on many occasions, when the student is ready, the master appears. It seems to me that when a person has thrown over one religion, two religions, is thinking about the nature of his or her belief structure, that this person would be ripe for some sort of divine energy to impress itself.
Exactly.
Isn't the divine force being drawn forward through this process?
Oh yes, because you see, for the first time. That which you begin to take seriously will begin to give its answer up to you. You know, all of you walk around this earth plane as if you don't have anything to do with it, that somehow you just bumble along and either you'll get your answers or you won't. That is false. Those of you who sit there and pune and whine and say that you don't have any answers, that your life is a mess, it's your own problem. It isn't anybody else's problem. It's your problem. And it's simply that you aren't taking your own neuroses seriously. You must take things seriously in order to get rid of them. And you don't run to a neuroses specialist. You sit down with your own neuroses and you clarify. And you begin to be very clear on what it is that you want and what it is that you seek. And until you've done that, there's no progress possible. You can't be cured by a medical doctor until you have cognized that there is something wrong and then said, I need help. And in this case, you go to a medical doctor and he begins the process. He can't reach out of the ethers and grab you out of your living room and force you into his office and start to aid you. You have to be responsible. You're responsible for your own freedom. And the first step in responsibility is realizing that you are not free, that there is such a state as freedom, and that you could move into that area of your constant awareness. This is your responsibility. Any constriction is your own problem. Harsh words, perhaps, but they are true. And be grateful that they are true, because it is the very fact that it all pivots on you that is the thing that is going to free you. If it pivoted on someone else, you would be in a bad state. Then you would have to somehow bring that other person into line and harmony with you and have that person really dedicated to helping you. And you know full well that you cannot count on very many people on the earth plane to help you. They each help themselves. And then if there's any time left over, they help their immediate loves, their immediate people in their own family. And then if there happens to be any time left, there's another little circle of people that they would like to help and so on. You know, humans are very constricting in who they will help. I mean, with the kind of dedication that we're talking about to bring you to freedom. So be grateful it pivots on yourself. So, yes, that is the moment that the divine can really move for you, because you're stripping yourself away. Now, the reason people fall back into religions is because they get to this point and fear overtakes them. There are no rules out there. There are no rules in that vastness of no religion. And it is frightening, because they have only themselves and their own intuitive faculties. And this is when they rush to the books. This is when they rush to any book at all that will help them fill the gap. And they read and they read and they read and they get glimmers of truth. Ah, yes, this is so, this is so. But the problem with this kind of thing is that it's often scattered and has no real definite point that they can pivot upon. So the movement really must come. I mean, I'm not saying you don't need to read. That's up to the person. I do feel that most people read much too much about spiritual things because they know the answer. They know within themselves now, most people who are listening to these tapes have read the books. They know what has to be done. And reading is simply another way of not doing what has to be done. So there are all kinds of ways that you can fool yourself. But let us move to the second stage, which is, what if you have observed your rules and you do not really wish to push yourself to the periphery where there are where nothing is written, where all is spontaneous and in the moment of revealing itself? What do you do then if you just don't wish to give those up? Well, then what you must do is decide on at least trimming down your rules to a reasonable amount. When you are looking at your rules, you will see that you are drawn to following some of them and not drawn to following others. Usually you are drawn, let us take the classic case of a man and a wife. This is, I think, very, very familiar. There's a man and a wife and they are both supposedly engaged on the path. However, they have different inclinations. One has the inclination of deep hours of meditation. The other has the inclination of selfless service to all of the family. Now, these should not, on the surface, be conflicting. But if you look carefully at them, they are conflicting. Because a person who wants deep hours of meditation is going to be by themselves, withdrawn, isolated, in their own separate compartment even, perhaps a little shed somewhere that is really their own, and they're withdrawing from the family. Now, the woman then is, usually it is this, the man withdraws and the woman is left to do the household chores. Now, she is supposed to be a selfless servant, but usually that translates out as having to serve someone. She doesn't see herself sitting quietly in her home as serving. So she is what would be called a bustler, and she's bustling around fixing meals and so on. Well, there's no one to eat the meals because he's not interested. His austerities are such that he is not interested in food. He certainly isn't interested in any kind of sexual relationship. So all of these things are now impinging on her. Now, if she's truly into selfless service, at this time, of course, she can release it all and just go about doing whatever few things are interesting to her and leave him alone. This is a very rare human being. A very rare human being. What usually happens is that she wants someone there to serve. Women tend to have this problem. They need people to serve, and they don't feel that they're doing their bit on the earth plane if they don't have people to serve. And this is, of course, a very nice egotistical device that lets you feel very important. You're going bustling around serving people. I say again, whatever you do on the earth plane, if you really wish to serve, the one thing you will do is liberate yourself. That is how you can really serve. Any other kind of service is oftentimes two-headed. In other words, you serve them, but you are doing it in order to serve yourself, in order to feel useful, in order to feel that you are somehow important and in a state of helping others. Be very careful of your own do-good instincts, any of you listening to this. I do not suggest that you do ill. Someone asked the strange question about, I keep saying to people, I don't care what you do, does that then mean you can go on and do anything you want? Well, of course you can do anything you want if you're willing to pay the price. You know as well as I do, all of you, that negative actions reaps negative rewards upon you. If you're willing to pay the price, so be it. Go and do it. If you are willing to hurt other people, then know that you in your own turn will have the ache of heart. If you are willing to be selfish, go on. I don't need to tell you that all the religions of the world ask you to live a clear, straight, and helpful life. That is obvious. That is the most obvious of the spiritual disciplines, is to live a, quote, good life. That is utterly obvious. And anyone who calls that into question has not really thought very seriously about anything that anyone has ever said to them. But the only reason that I don't emphasize living a good life is that it seems to me that you are already saturated with this belief that you have to live a good life, and somehow living a good life in itself is going to be a benefit. The only benefit of living a good life is that you have a good karma, if you wish to put it that way, that the events that impinge on you can be called good. But, you know, my honest feeling is that if you give too much attention to wanting to live a good life and just doing good works as being some kind of satisfactory way to live your life, you will die and you will still not be free. Freedom doesn't come from living a good life. It would be extremely difficult to be free if you were living a very bad life, because your karma would become very encrusted with difficulties and it would be very hard. But in every moment, even there, there is a way out. In the most difficult extremities of the most so-called evil life on the earth plane, there is hope. There is that which will come forward and save you. And if you so desire, it will come and release you from your bondage if you are determined to be released. So there are no rules. But it is simply one fact that it is easier to be free if your life is simple and encumbered and selfless, than if it is selfish, egotistical, and complex. But even that is not a rule. Even that is not a rule. So I hope I've answered that. I know there are various questions. Does Bartholomew then not care whether I hurt others or not? Well, this is a silly kind of a question, of course. I mean, it's just absolutely a silly question. There's no question that anyone who looks seriously at any kind of spiritual unfoldment realizes that selflessness is a very important part of it. So, reap your karma as you will. I don't need to place in your minds the idea of living a good life, because I think religions have placed this in your minds for centuries. But you see, it doesn't do any good, because all of you know what the good life is. All of you have a vague idea of what is harmonious and selfless, but you don't do it. So why should I? Well, I'm simply saying that you know it already. And so you still don't do it. So I doubt that anything that I'm going to say is going to make any tremendous change. People who want to be selfish will continue to be selfish. And no words of mine or anybody else are going to change that. And someday they will awaken to the fact that their life would probably be more harmonious if it were selfless. But that is something must come from within. It cannot be placed upon you from without. It is a knowing within. So, let us go back then to our subject field, which is when you finally have seen that you and your husband, or the wife and the husband, whatever, are in conflict. What then do you do about this? The renunciate who is in the reclusive world, who wants the quietude and firmly believes that, and the woman, on the other hand, who does not believe that that is important, but that service is what is important. There is a conflict. Now, the reason I keep saying that the straight, clear path is to give up all such belief structures is that under the circumstances just given, you can create a great deal of disharmony. And you will spend many, many hours and perhaps years of your married life in conflict over this. And it is very easily resolved. But what it takes is a very strange commodity, which most married couples do not seem to want to do, which is to allow the other to do what they wish. Now, the renunciate needs to have his time. Now then, how about the housewife? What then does she need to do? Well, you know what she usually does is to go into such enterprises as what are called the do-gooders. And there's nothing wrong with that. If she is doing that in a selfless way, that will bring her very clearly to a state of understanding. Anything can be used. If you're using it for that purpose, Nothing works if you're not using it for that. It doesn't mysteriously come in. You know, you have to have made the thrust to be selfless in order to meet its needs. But, of course, what is the ideal situation is that you look at the other and you say, this is the other's desire, and I will only support that by being selfless in this regard. And even if you have conflicting views, you will give that up to that extent that you will allow the other the space to be who, what she or he is. Now, if you think this is an easy thing, my friends, I suggest you try it. Because I do not think it is easy for Earth people to do this. Earth people are so constricted with ideas of how you're supposed to help each other, about how you are not supposed to think about yourself. But what really happens is this, that the one person says this should be a selfless thing, but usually they're saying the other person should be selfless and let them alone. The other person should not impinge on them, whereas they are very, very happy to impinge on others, either by being there or by not being there. Now, I'm overdrawing the case in order to hopefully make a point, which is the following. As long as you have a belief structure of any kind, you are going to limit yourself, and in that, you are going to limit others. Because your opinions, your desires of what is needful for you is going to spill over. And if it is one of those fortunate cases that you merge exactly, mesh, that your belief structures mesh, then we have this very nice and rare situation of two people on the so-called on the path who have the same thrust, and their lives move forward dynamically because they have the same belief structure and they regulate their lives accordingly. And this, of course, is the benefits of having a teacher on the human plane, because the teacher on the human plane will do this for you. He or she will say, yes, you should rise at this hour and you should meditate thusly, and then you should do this. You should not do this. This is not good and this is good. And usually people who are very close, very wanting to keep their belief structures will fall into some kind of a discipleship. Someone who has rules that they can follow, and hopefully their mate will follow too. But if not, at least they have the authority in their hands. You see, they can say, well, who are you to argue with this authority? And then they will put forward their text, which will state that thus and so is required. So, I'm simply pointing these out as a way of seeing, if you will only see, the tremendous limitations that you place on yourself when you have a belief structure. If you have a very strong belief structure, if you look carefully, it is usually based not on your own feelings, not on your own way, but on someone else's way. So consider this. And if so, if you wish to stay in it, then so be it. But understand that you're going to have limitations. There are going to be constrictions from others. There are going to be a certain amount of so-called negativity will come on you because you are going to persevere at all costs. I'm not saying you should not. I am not saying that you should not. I'm simply saying be aware that at that level, because you haven't come in at the top, you are still operating on the belief that some moments of the day spent in a certain way are more beneficial than others. Now, I can hear people saying, Bartholomew, you yourself state that meditation is important. How then does this fit in? If you will look carefully at what I will say, I've said, you will see that this is perhaps the only thing that I have ever said I felt was universally helpful. And the reason that I say it is most of the time my observation of humans is that their lives are so busy, their minds are so chatterful, that they have never taken the time to sit down and to see what is going on. Now, if you are one of those people who is living in a life where your mate does not believe in meditation, I assure you there are many hours between, say, midnight and 4 a.m. when your meditation is not going to harm anyone. There are harmless times that you can fulfill this. And if your mate even objects to that, why then do you have to sit in a certain position? You can just lay in your bed unknown. You don't have to make any large commotion over this kind of thing. You can sit quietly or lay quietly in your bed and simply do what it is that you need to do. You don't have to conflict with others in order to be free. And if this is the situation you find yourself in, instead of attacking it head on, just simply go the line of least resistance and allow that other person their own beliefs and simply do your quiet work. It is all very simple. Things do not have to be made complicated. I feel that a life lived moment to moment with awareness is the easiest life to live, because it does not impinge on other people. They do not worry about it. They may not even be aware of what you're doing. In fact, if you're really doing it, you'll be quiet about it. There's no need to tell others and flaunt your new life. That isn't what it's all about. The real life, the real thrust for the divine is done in the quietude of your own being and has nothing to do with anyone else. And things can come and go, and you can live your life quietly, releasing other people from your thought structures, releasing them from your demands and your ego's desires, just releasing them over and over. That doesn't take any flaunting of voice. You can do it in a very quiet, humble way. And who knows, that might be the absolute maximum. All of these other things may end up being great obstacles, because you see, once you get convinced that there is a certain rule, a certain regulation, then you're going to be very godlike about it and go around demanding that others also conform to your own ideas, and then all can be very chaotic. So, I think that's about all we need to say, but I just wanted to make it clear that there is a way out of your rules. If you cannot go that way, then you have to be willing to face the resistances from others. You have to somehow make your life conform in some kind of a rigorous, structured way. You cannot then be spontaneous, because people who have rules are not spontaneous. Something new comes into their life, and maybe this new thing is God-given, but they turn it away, they push it away, because it doesn't fit their rules. You know, it just doesn't fit. So they have to have very strict rules. And then we have a lot of things like hurting other people's feelings. You go to a meal and someone has taken a great deal of trouble and you realize it's something that your rules do not allow you to eat. Now which rule are you going to follow? The rule of love that says, I will not refuse this beautiful gift given? Or are you going to go to your rule of saying, thou shalt not eat this? What level are you going to come in at the rule? Where does your heart lie? Where is the reality of rules here? And if you're looking, you've got a lot of rules, my friends. You've got them all the way from the highest spiritual rules down to the little mundane ways of how you should live your life. And again, we go back. That is not called an intuitive life. That is a life lived by rules of the mind. And go on. Do it if you wish. But I think you will find that God can move with greater ease and much more breezily through you if you put your rules down. If you allow your rules to go down and you just allow life to be your rule, that whatever comes is your rule, and just see what happens to you. I can just see people saying, ah, so now I have the temptation to, let us say, to abscond with some of my company's money, and this is what's in me in the moment, then, and there's no rules to stop me. Should I go with it? Well, if that's what you really want to do, who is there to stop you? There's no one there to stop you. The rules come from within. And if your rule says that you can steal from others and still be a kind of a person that you choose to be, if you can still enjoy seeing yourself in the mirror and telling everyone what you have done, if that doesn't bother you, then I suppose you should just go right ahead and do it. It depends on what's going on in you. When you find yourself hiding things, my friends, know you're violating your own rules. When you are hiding any event from anyone else, you are violating your rules. And look carefully at those. Those things that you do not wish to see on the front page of the newspaper the next morning are things that you are violating, not somebody else's rules, which is how you will state it in your mind, but your own inner rules. Because anything that you are proud to do, you will do openly. Anything that you are not proud to do openly is something that you are ashamed of. And you are ashamed because you have violated your own rules. And you'll say, no, it's not my own rules. It's just that I'm married to this man or this woman or so on, that I don't want them to know about it, because if they know about it, they will take repercussions against me and then I will be in a difficult position. That is a fantasy. You are projecting. That is a fantasy. Because this is one of the ego's great devices, which is you project out onto others your own guilt feelings and make other people carry that burden for you, whereas you just simply say, well, it is their problem and I will continue on my own way, but I simply will not tell them because I just don't want to make my life confused. The fact is that you yourself are feeling guilty about it. That is the truth. And if you go deeply within you, you will see that those things that you feel guilty about are violations of your own set of rules. And perhaps those sets of rules are very helpful. Who knows? Who can say? If your basic rule is selflessness instead of selfishness, then your entire life changes. Everything changes. If your basic rule is to be selfless in every way and to put your own desires second and the desires of others, those that you are asked to serve in whatever way, are secondary, if you go within you, you will know those things that are harmonious, what I would call in movement with the Tao, and those things that are not. It's a very simple matter. So again, my friends, there's nothing mysterious about right action. Nothing at all mysterious about it. It's simply that people don't like to do right action. They know right action, but they choose not to do it because they choose to follow their own desires. And when you conflict right action with your own desires, most of the time you will pick your own desires, and in doing so you will somehow take the responsibility and place it on someone else. And it would be someone else now who is responsible, not you. This is a very unfortunate trick. If you had to carry the burden in your own self and clearly see that, I think many people's right action would come into being a lot sooner. But they don't do this. The ego has this device of deflecting the guilt and the responsibility and just allowing you to go ahead and enjoy yourself. But in the back of your mind, things nag. When things are nagging, this is a clue. This is a watchword. Something is wrong. So whenever you feel a nag, take it seriously. Sit down and be serious about it. Look at it carefully. But most people want to continue on with their own desires. They enjoy what they're doing. They don't really want to make any changes. And so be it. But let's not fool ourselves. Let's realize that we are doing what we're doing. And let's be very clear about it. Are there any questions?
Is it implied from your remarks that it is possible to achieve enlightenment through rules if the basic rule is selflessness?
All right. A good question. If you have taken on the one rule of being utterly selfless, it is my promise to you that you will ultimately see the clarity within and the clarity without. Because a life lived selflessly, in the deepest sense, is a very mysterious thing. If you want to think about that, my friends, I think it would be well worth thinking about. What do we mean when we say living a selfless life? What does that really mean? A selfless life is a very different kind of a life than any of you are living that I see now. There are moments of selflessness for all of you, without question. Some of you have more moments of selflessness than others. But a truly selfless life moves into something else very quickly. A selfless life, when most of the day is lived selflessly, with no thought of reward, just as a selfless surrender over and over and over, moment to moment to moment, which means that whatever is before you is done from a selfless point of view. Your own wishes and desires are never manifest because you're selfless. You don't have the strength of your own desires. You don't push them on other people. You don't voice your ideas. You don't talk a lot. You don't do a lot of things. If you're being selfless, there's a lot of things you don't do. Because if you're talking a lot, then probably other people are not being able to say things that they would like to say. Perhaps your role should be that of listener if you're truly selfless. And everything that spontaneously moves in your life, you serve. You know, you just serve it. It comes into your life, and it has a need, and you meet that need. And it's a selfless life, lived utterly surrendered to whatever is happening in the moment, and your own desires are less and less. Now, what is happening in a selfless life is very interesting, because what you are doing is turning away from your own desires. You have one desire, and that is to be selfless. Now, that is the same as the stick of awareness. You see, a selfless life is a stick of awareness, just as the standing back, the detachment, is a stick used to bring you to that point where you are so detached, where you're so immersed in the vast self and not in the small I, in the small self. When you have detached yourself from the drama and the observer, the selfless life is a tool such as that. Do you understand? It is the stick that burns the fire, but in doing so, it burns itself up too. The selfless life is done thusly, and that is how you can burn it up. Now, a lot of women I think, are strongly inclined toward this path of selflessness. The problem is that they put another word in it. They say selfless service. When you put another word in of service, then you are in another realm. So I would suggest, because that means action. And so often the selfless life is not one of action, it's one of inaction. It's one of not doing rather than doing. Do you see the vast difference? And if you put the word service in there, then we are going to have everyone jumping in with their own ideas of service and what that means and how to go about it. And oh my, all the worlds then arise from this one. But if a life lived selflessly, with each moment simply as the receptive principle of moving into whatever action is necessary or inaction that is necessary, rising out of the moment without any thought to your own desires, has effectually turned you away from your own desire structure. And anything turned away from loses its energy. So the energy then goes into one thing only, which is to be aware in the moment of the selflessness, the need for selflessness. And someone could say to me, but then that could be a very arrogant perception. Not if it's lived long enough. Not if it's lived long enough, because there will come something into that kind of a life that is very different from anything that you know. And all I can say is try it. Those of you who are drawn to it, try it. And just see what happens. See, and it is fascinating. It would be interesting for each of you to live one day, to determine one day you're going to live the entire day in selflessness. And see what that really means. Just what does that really mean, to live one day without impinging your desires, your beliefs, your ideas on anyone else? How would you live that day? Oh my, how a difference it would be. For those of you that are serious about this, I would suggest you think about that. One life, one day, live selflessly. What does that really mean? How would you do your day? What would you speak of? What would you think upon? What would your actions be? I think this would be an interesting thing. One life, one light, one day. I think we've gone on long enough. I hope we've answered all of the questions. If any come up that I have not been able to cover, if I have been in any way obscure, if I have in any way been contradictory, I would very much appreciate some clarifications from any of you who are listening. But as always, my only hope is that you take it all seriously. That is really my only hope. I see as I look across the earth plane that many people are half-hearted. And at this time of dynamic energy, which is in the summer, the energy moves with more power. All things are coming into more action. Now is the time for the major thrust. Now is not the time for the drinking beer by the swimming pool and falling into oblivion. Now is the time for the dynamic movement. This is the time when the creative forces are in full swing. Everything is coming up. Everything is growing and meeting its fulfillment and moving into its own beautiful fullness. And such can it be for all of you. So instead of allowing the summer to slip by and waiting until the cold of the winter, when things will be less tempting for you, I would ask you to give it your best at this time. It is a beautifully dynamic time, and it carries in it the power of freedom. But nothing can be given you unless you put your arms out for it. I see so many of you with a half-hearted effort, and therefore a half-hearted result. And my heart aches because I know so well the beauty of a full-hearted turning over of all things, a full-hearted giving of everything. A full-hearted immersion in the whole situation of freedom, in being so utterly willing to allow freedom to take the foreground and egotistical satisfactions the background. It is all so clear, it is all so easy, but the golden key is desiring it, wanting it above all things. Seeing it as that which is the only thing that will bring you the peace and the joy and the expansion and the bliss and the creativity that you seek. It is all there, my friends. I see it now so dynamically on the plane. The earth plane is so magical, be ready to receive all of you right now. I would ask that you give it your best. Goodbye.
Goodbye.